When I was in college, I knew a guy that on Friday nights, he would call a girl for a date, and it'd go something like this. He'd say, "Cynthia, this is Bill. Cynthia, I've already called Susan. And she's going to be out of town tomorrow night. And I called Judy, and she said she already had a date. I called Ann. She said she was busy. So I just thought I'd call you and see if maybe you'd like to go out with me tomorrow night." And needless to say, he didn't get a whole lot of dates that way. Nobody likes to be second choice, much less third or fourth or fifth. And to call a girl up on the phone like that and say, "You're my second choice," it's a good way to get in trouble. The old comic strip, Charlie Brown, they said to him one day, he said, "Charlie Brown, winning isn't everything." He said, "That's true." But he said, "Losing isn't anything." Factory seconds are cheaper than firsts. Not as good as first. Consolation prizes, they're not as good as winning. And being runner-up is not nearly as fine as winning first place. Most of us, we like to be on top. And we like to know that what we're doing is first. And we have a surge of emotion when somebody says, "You're pretty good, but you're in second place." Wouldn't be a very good idea this morning, men, to tell your wife on the way home, say, "Honey, you are the second best looking woman in that church." I wouldn't suggest that. Just wouldn't work out too well. It's a good way to get in trouble. But you know, sometimes great things can happen with seconds and with second choices. Most of you have probably heard of Whistler's mother. You know the famous painting. You know that he was a painter because he did this famous painting of the woman sitting in the rocking chair. Does anybody know what Whistler's first name was? It was James. James Whistler. And the interesting thing about James Whistler was he didn't want to be a painter. He wanted to be a chemist. And he went to West Point. And he enrolled there and he was able to get in there, but he flunked out of chemistry. Just couldn't do it. Couldn't handle it. So he said, "I think I'll be an engineer." And he wasn't any good at that either. And so finally he said, "I guess I'll be a painter." And he made his mark on life and on this world by his third choice. Sir Walter Scott lived at the same time and was on the scene the same time Lord Byron was many years ago. And the burning ambition of Sir Walter Scott was to be a great poet. But he couldn't hold a candle to Lord Byron. And so he shifted from poetry over to prose. And he began to write great novels. And when he wrote these first novels, he was so ashamed that he couldn't be a poet like Lord Byron that he wouldn't even put his name on them. He used a pseudonym. But he later began to include his name, Sir Walter Scott, and he wrote great novels, novels that have lived throughout the ages. But he did it because that was his second choice. You see, a lot of good things sometimes happen in life with second choices. I thought about this week, and as I thought about it, I realized that God certainly does great things with second choices. And in fact, I wonder in an audience this size, men and women, I wonder how many of you married your second choice. Now, I'm not asking for a show of hands. That would not be discreet. But I bet a lot of you may have married your second choice, and it probably worked out a whole lot better than if you'd have been able to have gotten your first choice. God says there are great things I can do through second choices. Now that's the thought. And I hope I've set the hook, because I want to talk this morning about some second choices. In the Old Testament, there was a man by the name of Joseph. Joseph was a favored son of his father. He was envied by his brothers. Genesis chapter 37 tells the story. Joseph was told in a dream that he was going to do great things for God. He was going to serve God in a way that nobody else in his whole family was going to be able to serve him. Now, if we could have popped in on the scene at that time, and we'd have been able to have the opportunity to talk to Joseph, and we'd have said, Joseph, what is your first choice for serving God? Would you rather do it as a free son here in your father's house, in your own country? Or would you rather do it as a slave somewhere else? Now, I don't have to be omniscient to know what Joseph's first choice would have been. He'd have said, well, I'd rather be free. I'd rather be in my father's house. I'd rather be my own man. Surely I could serve God better that way. But God said, that's wonderful, Joseph. You're going to get your second choice. And he was sold into Egyptian slavery by his own brothers for 20 pieces of silver. He went down to the land of Egypt, and he lived there as a slave in the house of Potiphar. Potiphar was the captain of the king's guard. Then God could have mythically, it would seem, say to Joseph, now Joseph, you're a slave down here in Egypt. I'm going to give you another choice. Would you rather continue to live and to serve as a servant, a chief steward in the house of a distinguished man like Potiphar? Or would you rather be a prisoner in chains, thrown into a dark prison? Now again, I don't have to extrapolate anything into the future to know the answer to that. Joseph would say, well, as bad as it is to be a slave, it's better to serve in a house like Potiphar, to a man like Potiphar, than to be a prisoner in the prison house. God said, that's fine, Joseph. But you're going to get your second choice again. And through lies and through deceit and through jealousy of Potiphar's wife, Joseph is thrown into prison. He's accused of immorality, and it was not true. He did not do it, but God sent him with his second choice to the prison house. Now the day finally came when everything turned for Joseph. And God said, now Joseph, all of these second choices, they have been woven into a pattern. And now your life is going to blossom. Now the career that I planned for you is going to bloom. And he lifted him through the power of God, through the ability to interpret Pharaoh's dream. He lifted him out of the prison house and put him next to the throne. The land of Egypt, the land of Pharaoh. Then Joseph was not only able to deliver himself because of the position and the power that he had, he was able to redeem the entire household of Jacob. It became the nation of Israel. And that saved the family and the tribes. It ultimately incubated Jesus Christ and brought him into the world and thus redeemed every man and woman here this morning. But it was done through a series of second choices with God. There was another man by the name of Moses. Moses was born in a period of very treacherous times, again in Egypt. The Israelites had fallen to slavery, and those years had come, 400 of them or so, after Joseph had died. God calls Moses to be born of the world. We read about it in Exodus chapter 2. Moses is born. His mother put him in the ark of bulrushes and put him out there in the Nile River. They were killing all of the Israelite male children at that time. They didn't want a single one of them to live to the age of maturity. It was in this setting that Moses was born, and he was floating out on the Nile River. If Moses had been old enough, if he had been a boy with a will, if he could have said what he wanted to do, we could have asked him, said, Moses, would you rather be raised in the house of Pharaoh with all of its attendant blessings? Or would you rather be raised with your own mother? I have every feeling Moses would have said, given the choice, I believe in spite of all of the advantages, all the education, all of the money that I'm going to have, I'd rather be with my own mother and live with the Israelites. Because that's exactly the choice he makes later in life. But God didn't give him that choice. He brought him up in the house of Pharaoh. Years later, having been ingrained into him, that feeling through the stories and the plans of God that were put into his heart by his own mother, who served as his nursemaid, Moses knew who he was. He knew where he was going. He knew what his purpose in life was. God could have come to him one day and said, now Moses, going to ask you again, what would you rather do? Would you rather deliver the people of Israel now, or would you rather wait 40 years from now? Well, Moses would have said, I'm ready right now. He proved it. He went out and he killed an Egyptian taskmaster. And he did it right now. Moses was ready, but God said, not yet. Not yet. And because of that killing, he had to flee to the land of Midian. God said, I've got things for you to do out there. He got married. He had children. And he stays, he lives as a shepherd in the land of Midian for 40 years. 40 years. But you see, it wasn't wasted time, because when he came back from the land of Midian at 80 years of age, he not only was able to march into the presence of Pharaoh, he not only knew the court of Pharaoh and was able to walk into the nobility there, but now, at the same time, Moses had learned the shepherd's life. He'd learned all of the trails. He knew where all the watering holes were in the very land that he's going to lead God's people 2 million strong through. God got him ready to do shepherding work. And so after 40 years piled on top of a man who was already 40 years old, he comes back at age 80 and he leads God's people. You know the stories. But I believe, once again, had Moses been given the choice, had God said, Moses, are you ready to go into the promised land now? There's no doubt in my mind that Moses' second choice would have been after he led the people across the Red Sea and up by Sinai and up to the land of Canaan to turn around now and go back down to wander 40 years in the wilderness. I believe that would definitely have been Moses' second choice, if not his last choice. I believe he would have said, Lord, I believe I'd rather go into the promised land now. God said, not going to do it. Moses, you're going to get your second choice if you please. And he turned Moses around. And Moses led those people in the very way he had been trained to lead them, out in the very wilderness where God had made him pay his dues as a leader for 40 years. Finally, when it was all over and Moses brought the people around to the land of Moab, they looked across the Jordan River. Moses died there. My guess is Moses could finally see what God had in mind all along, and that is, he wasn't ready before. He needed preparation. Had he gotten his first choice, things would not have worked out for the best. If everything had gone the way he wanted it, everything would have gone haywire as far as what God's plan was. But it's not just the Old Testament. We come to the New Testament and we see the same thing happening with the Apostle Paul. Paul was out on his missionary journeys. He was going out. He was doing great missionary efforts. And there comes the time in Acts chapter 16. Paul's walking along and he's going through that giant province of Galatia. And as he makes his way along, he says, I think I want to go this direction. That's my first choice. This looks sensible to me. And he says, I want to go over to Bithynia. I want to preach over there. Holy Spirit said, no. No, not going. He said, well, I think I'll go over here then. Holy Spirit again said, no. And finally, the only thing that was left was a straight road that led straight to Troas. And that was definitely Paul's second choice. He didn't want to go to Troas. And when he got there, he had a dream in the night and a vision to the dream. And he saw a man in Macedonia. And the man in Macedonia said, come over into Macedonia and help us. Acts 16, verse 9. Paul made that trip across the sea and he went into the continent of Europe and he took the gospel message with him. And I would suggest this morning that we need to be thankful that Paul did it that way, that he didn't get his first choice. Because if he had turned back into Asia, Asia has been overrun by the Muslim faith. But when he went to Europe, they were receptive. And folks, from the shores of Europe, our ancestors came to America. And they brought to America with them from Europe the tradition of the Bible. And we stand today in the biblical tradition because Paul didn't get his first choice. He got his second choice. But his second choice worked out so well because God had plans for it. Paul late in his life said, I want to go to Rome. I want to preach the gospel to those that are in Rome. In fact, in Romans chapter 1, verse 11, he told the Romans, he said, I long to see you. I long to come to you. I long to be there that I can impart to you some spiritual gift to make you strong. Now again, if God had said, okay, Paul, what's your choice? You want to travel to Rome as a free man? As your own man? You want to go to Rome and be able to go to the synagogue and do as you've always done and move around as a free person? Or would you like to go over there as a prisoner in chains and be limited to a hired house and maybe a chained Roman soldier to you? Which way would you rather go, Paul? Well, there's no choice there. Paul would obviously say, Lord, if it's all the same, I'd like to go as a free man. I'd like to have first class passage. God said, no, it's not how you're going to go. You're going to go on a ship. In fact, you're going to be shipwrecked. You're going to go as a prisoner. They captured him in Jerusalem. They lied about him in Jerusalem. They threw him into prison. They tried to assassinate him until finally Paul, as a Roman citizen, finally said, I appeal to Caesar. I'm going to claim my rights as a Roman to appeal to Caesar. And that's how he went to Rome. Not as a free man, but as a prisoner. Chained to a soldier. Couldn't move around like he wanted to. We'd say, my, my, what a tragedy. And no doubt Paul probably felt the same way while it was going on. But it's a wonderful thing this morning to be able to open up our Bibles and to be able to look at Philippians chapter 1, the first chapter, and to listen as Paul talks about his life. And he says in Philippians chapter 1, verse 12, he said, I want you to know, brethren, that what has happened to me has really served to advance the gospel. To advance the gospel. All of these terrible things that I thought were destroying me, Paul said they worked out for good. He said in verses 13 and 14, he says, as a result, it has become clear throughout the whole palace guard and everyone else that I am in chains for Christ. Because of my chains, most of the brothers in the Lord have been encouraged to speak the word of God more courageously and more fearlessly. Paul said, I thought it was terrible, but it was a good thing that I didn't get my first choice, but God's choice was best. The palace guard he talks about in that passage, that's Caesar's guard. No doubt they're the ones who had guard duty of Paul. No doubt one of them was probably chained to Paul every day. Now you talk about a captive audience. How would you like to be chained to a preacher all day long? A preacher who knows a lot of words and loves to use them. And you go in of a morning and your entire guard shift is chained to him. You can't get away from him. And you say, I'm not going to listen. But day after day, hour after hour, he's talking, and he's talking about God, and he's talking about godly things. How long can you do that and say, I refuse to pay attention? It seems apparent that some of these palace guards did listen. And they were convinced. And they were converted. Because in Philippians chapter 4, verse 22, the Apostle Paul said, all the saints send you greetings. Listen. All the saints send you greetings, especially those who belong to the household of Caesar. That's the Caesar palace guards. Who would have ever thought it? They were converted. Paul said, I never thought it would be like that. I never dreamed it would work out like this. That of all these second choices that I had, they would turn out to be the greatest plan God ever made. Now I have only one point to make this morning. And this is the point. I would suggest to us that about the only thing we can know for sure about the providence of God in advance is to have confidence in it. Let me say that again. About the only thing I think that we can really know for sure about the providence of God in advance is to have confidence in it. To be confident that though we can't see why things happen sometimes, we don't understand why we're stuck in this ditch right now. We're not sure why we've taken this detour that seems like it's moving us further away from our goal instead of closer to our goal, and we don't understand it. And we find ourselves sometimes saying, Lord, if I had a second choice, this would certainly be it. But my first choice is to go right down this path. Sometimes I think God says to us, I'm sorry, but you're going to get your second choice. And we have to walk the road of our second choice then with confidence and faith. For Paul said, we walk by faith, not by sight. 2 Corinthians chapter 5, verse 7. He says that's the way it is. The day will come later we can turn back at the end. And we'll be able to do what Joseph did. When he said to his brothers, he said, you sold me into Egypt, into slavery, and you meant it for evil. Joseph said, but God, I now see, meant it for good. Moses could say, God, I didn't understand why we did it that way. But now I understand. These people needed to get ready. I needed to get ready. I wasn't ready. I wasn't prepared to lead. But now I can see what it was all about through all of those years of second choices. Paul could stand up in Rome and say, now I see that these things, instead of destroying the gospel, these things have fallen out for the progress of the gospel. The day will come, brethren, when we'll be able to make similar statements about our second choices. Last evening, we had a wonderful fellowship out at the Williams house. Don't know if you were there. If you weren't, you missed a good time. You missed a good meal. You missed good fellowship. You missed a good program. It was a great occasion. And one of the things that was obviously on everybody's mind was the realization that historically, the West Park congregation is completing its first year of existence. Many of the highlights for the first year were showcased. And all of the accomplishments, they bring great satisfaction, and they should. They really should. It's a good thing. A lot's been accomplished in a short period of time. And you have good reason to feel good about those things. But I wonder this morning if it might be healthy for us to just ask the question, what about the discouragements? It's good to look at the positives, but just for a minute, what about the second choices that have occurred during the year? No doubt there have been some. We couldn't expect it to be any other way. How do you feel about those second choices this morning? What about the roadblocks and the detours that popped up? Land prices are going up, getting higher and higher. Discouragements are out there. How do you feel about it? And even within the body, disagreements that naturally come. And they will 20 years from today. When you've got people together and families together, families fuss. And that those things will happen. The fusses, the arguments that filter to the top, even among folks who dearly love themselves. And love each other. And show that love to each other. Sometimes we have the feeling of disharmony. That there's disharmony and hurt feelings. How do we feel about all that? You say, well, they certainly weren't our first choices. They were our second choices. In fact, we wish we could go back and make some of those choices again. But you know you can't. But from what I see this morning from Scripture, from the Bible, is we don't always get our first choice. Sometimes we just have to do the best we can with second choices. Can we realize today, on this historical moment, as we move ahead, can we realize that God can be working great things in the life of this good church, sometimes through second choices. Sometimes through choices we wouldn't necessarily have made, but He makes for us. Does He send us on a course sometimes that seems far, far afield from where we ought to be? No doubt He does. Are there times we wish it could be different? Of course we do. Which means then that what we need to do is to continually have confidence and have faith and believe in patience that God is working things together for good for those that love the Lord. Which leads me back to really my one and only point for the morning. About the only thing that we can know for sure about the providence of God in advance is to have faith in it and to have confidence in it. And to realize that one day we'll be able to stand and look back and say, now I get it. Now I understand. I see where God was pushing us all the time. I didn't agree with it. I didn't like it. I wished it could have been different. But now I see that God knew what we needed and He knew the course to put us on. God can work great things in this church, sometimes with second choices. But there's one first choice He wants us to make. And that's for each one of us to choose Jesus first. Above all else, no real choice. Jesus first, last, and always. Make that choice right now as we stand to sing.